A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's Monday, which means it's time for the Front 3 Weekend Review with me, Adam Bolt, with the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Whoop whoop.
And the stat man himself, Dave O'Brien.
Hey-o.
What an introduction. Guys, thank you so much for listening. We're going to be talking the FA Cup action, rounding up the football from around Europe, as well as talking our player of the weekend, as voted for by you on Twitter, at the Front 3, with a number, not the word. Let's talk FA Cup first, though, Lawrence. What a weekend. The magic is back. A lot of shocks, a few giant killings, but despite all that...
Great youth.
Not everyone was happy, though, Lawrence.
Yeah.
A whole debate has emerged around team selection about the weakening of the FA Cup.
Yeah,
the weakening of the competition. Our fans being cheated. You know, our clubs prioritising the wrong competitions. Are they playing too many youth players? Now, it seems to have started with Alan Shearer last night on the BBC, whose quote was, "It's just crazy. I don't understand it. I'm all for bringing kids into the team, but not seven or eight of them. Six rounds from the third round to the final, it's not asking a lot, is it?" This weekend saw 13 Premier League clubs in the fourth round make 98 changes to their lineups, an average of 7.5 per team. Even Championship sides facing lower league opposition, like Leeds, made 10 changes. Brighton and Newcastle made 9. Obviously, this led to some surprise results. Lawrence, what do you make about Alan Shearer's comments, though? Perhaps there were too many changes.
I mean, I wouldn't even call them... I would call them surprise results in the sense that people didn't expect them. But then I thought I also agree with Pochettino's comment about it removing the leagues. It doesn't take away from those teams' achievement. Anyway, I don't agree. I think it's fine to bring youth through. These kids are all, I mean, they're not, some of them aren't even kids, but these young guys are playing very decent level of football most weeks. There's a reason that they're in these academies. There's a reason they're trained in such a way. They've probably got fitness and health, which is at some points superior to the players that they're going to be playing. And if I'm completely honest, I also think it's part of the magic of the FA Cup that people seem to be missing. People seem to overlook that there's more magic to the FA Cup than the winning and the losing of it, or the just the little sides beating the big sides. And that's all, that's where the analysis stops very often. So my argument would be playing the youth and making changes is part of managing a season. And it doesn't matter. It's up to the manager. We don't know the status of their squads. We don't know what's going on there. I just don't think it's something we can comment on from the outside.
I think that's a very good point, Lance. I think it's a strange one, Dave, isn't it, that there's usually a lot of complaints about not playing youth players, about not giving potential talent a chance. When it does happen, managers are criticised for making too many changes.
What do they expect? The FA Cup, you don't get anything from it. You don't get a Champions League spot. If you want to make that the tournament better, you want people to actually care about it, you put one of the Champions League spots there. But if you don't do that, then it's just going to be one of those things. It's a trophy. It's a good day out in Wembley. It's history and whatnot. But unfortunately, the Premier League has money. It has the league position. It has the ability to play against the best teams in Europe. So it's just unattractive for a manager that has to balance his squad. Unfortunately, you've got to balance the squad. What United have got X amount of games in the next few weeks with the Europa League coming back, with the League Cup final and so forth. You know, you can't afford to play your first team every week because they'll get knackered. And it's one of of those things where, again, we're going back to this Paul Merson thing. Why the hell are they talking about that? Surely they've been pushing. I reckon if we went back and we analysed Match of the Day in the FA Cup, I imagine they were talking maybe a season ago, oh, this is really good to see all these young players. Oh, Wenger's done a really good job here. Wenger's, and now they've completely flipped him. Been like, oh, there's too many young players here. People don't care about the Cup. Is that the only thing they can talk about? Is there nothing more that they can talk about on this day that that's the talking point? Like, what does the producer get paid for? What does Alan Shearer get paid for when that is his fucking analysis? Again, it goes back to the same thing, and it's a frustrating line of thought that keeps coming back, that these people get paid a shitload of money and come out with that. Like, there's loads of interesting things they could have talked about.
Well, I mean, here's the FA Cup, Dave. I mean, part of it is also that if we did offer that in the FA Cup, then there would be the chance that someone, one of the smaller winners from previous years, struggling to think of one right now, maybe a Millwall, someone like that, would then be in the Champions League. And frankly, that would also cripple the club. So it's not, I think the problem is that maybe Shearer himself has made an assumption here that because he doesn't respect the FA Cup and doesn't feel the same way about it, other people don't feel the same way about it as well. But and therefore, he's sort of saying, you know, oh, well, these guys should, and they don't. And frankly, I don't think he's had a chat with Klopp. I don't think he's had a chat with Gary Monk.
Listen, I mean, on Klopp, Gary Lineker came out with quite an interesting one. He accused Klopp,
again, really poorly informed,
a lack of knowledge of the depth in English football and a lack of respect.
Sorry, tell me how that happened. Tell me how that's the case when you look at that Liverpool starting lineup. That's not true.
The thing is, I think I agree with the point you made, Lawrence, in terms of, you know, in terms of Spurs, I wanted to see some of the young players in. I wanted to see some changes, see some of the squad players come in. I think as well, those sort of changes, not just for Spurs, but other teams, is what makes the competition exciting. The Wickham game was fantastic, was end-to-end stuff, was a real thriller. We wouldn't have had that if they hadn't have made those changes, and that is the reality of modern football, with balancing all these competitions and prioritising certain competitions over others. I think at the same time, though, I'm not sure whether Shearer and Lineker are trying to say something controversial. I'm not sure whether they're holding on to this romanticised ideal of the FA Cup. I still think this contributes to what makes it so exciting. You know, I'm talking about what a great weekend of football it was. That wouldn't have happened if everyone had played their full strength 11.
It may have. There are also teams out there who have fielded perfectly good sides and have been beaten. But if you go through that Liverpool team, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 players in there by the time the game finished, at least, that were senior players. And their bench is as stacked as it could be. Liverpool currently have what you could say is a miniature injury crisis. They've also got James Milner, Philippe Coutinho, Daniel Sturridge, Mignolet, Emre Can, Kevin Stewart, all players who have made regular first team appearances for Liverpool this season. So you can't say that he doesn't respect it. Again, it's poor analysis of Liverpool's really poor performance on that day. And they were playing a bloody championship side. If managers don't play the game, and I also think it's very easy for Lineker to make that sort of analysis, because I think he thinks he's adding on to something. I think he wants to be part of that media circus a little bit, and I don't think he's helping himself by making poorly informed comments at that point.
What do you make of what Dave mentioned there then, Lawrence, about the competition as a whole? Do you think there is a problem in terms of its relevance? Are there things that can be done to make the competition more attractive and make it more of a priority? Or do you think it's fine as it is? It's just fine.
Well, I mean, Dave makes a good point about as well about the analysis and the coverage. Maybe if the coverage wasn't the same thing every season, isn't it magical? Isn't it incredible?
What coverage?
Here's another package we've knocked up for £50.
What coverage do you want to see, though?
Well, I mean, go instead of making it about the big versus the little team, it is partly.
Is that the whole point of the competition, though? That's the whole thing that makes it unique and makes it special.
Well, no, it's not the whole thing, because smaller teams play each other. And that's also very exciting. It's about how far those teams get. You know, but that's one element, I think. And I think, you know, we're sold on that and we're told that's important, but that doesn't mean it's everything. And I also think
it's just mental. Like, you know, we could have, me and you, Lawrence, right? We probably could have sat down, right? And we could have talked about Liverpool versus Wolves. goals. Probably could have spoke about that for like 15 minutes of content, right? Like how the game structured, what like you think,
could fill a podcast.
And it seems like a really good thing right now. Liverpool are going through a bad run of form. They're struggling in the league. Why not make that the biggest talking point out of the whole show? That what is going wrong at Liverpool? How do Liverpool address this? How do Liverpool go past this? But what they're talking about is rubbish. Do you know what I mean? Like they could have broken down the formations that teams have played against Liverpool. You know, what systems they've come up with. Why Liverpool are struggling. Why in deeper midfield there's an issue there and so forth. But they come up with this absolute tosh again. Oh, there's too many young players being played now. Wait a minute. We thought we wanted to give them more game time, and that's why we've adjusted some of the rules in the Premier League, X, Y, and Z. But now we don't want to do it. This industry, I don't understand it. If I was the decision maker, I can't get in the head.
I've got to admit, I also find it unusual. I mean, it doesn't strike me as great analysis that normally what you do with any of the players that Klopp played, if you thought that they were of a certain level. In the past, English managers maybe would have said, we'll send them out on loan because I want them to get some experience in other leagues. Where would you have sent them? The lower leagues. So you were essentially what you're doing is you're playing them against what you would have played them in the past anyway, and then saying they're not good enough to play there in the first place. So I don't get it. All these players are great players for Liverpool. Probably the same at other academies. As well, you've probably got very talented young players there. It's a lack of logic. It sort of shows they've stopped at step one, and I don't think it quite works.
The only thing
give I'd us say, the match of the day job.
Yeah, the only thing I'd say in the defence is
you don't need to defend them.
No, just that Dave's saying you know they could spend a long time analysing. They could have spent a long time analysing the games instead of talking about his touch. It was just a comment that Alan Shearer made on the show. It wasn't something that was discussed in depth for like 10 minutes or anything like that. But it seems to have blown up into this big deal. The BBC weirdly seems to be pushing it. It's kind of like one of the main stories on their football website.
Great.
So yeah, there's a
how the BBC
bit of a strange one there.
They could have flipped to me and Lawrence, right? Standing by a TV, 30 seconds, we could have broke down why Wolves beat Liverpool. We could have done that in 30 seconds. Simple
well
as that.
Then, Dave. Challenge
well
accepted, no? Liverpool won, Wolves 2.
30 seconds later.
30 seconds. Explain the time. Go.
Liverpool really struggled in central midfield, especially with Lucas. He wasn't threading the balls in between the lines. And that's what you've got to do against the 4-4-2 defensive shape that Wolves were playing, is you've got to get in between the lines and make their centre-halves come out of position or drop their central midfielders, thus creating an overload in a certain area. Yeah. And that's unfortunately what Liverpool didn't do. They tried to solve the solution by bringing Coutinho on in deep in central midfield. This didn't solve the problem, it just made it worse. There was no players running in between the lines. With Mane, with Coutinho and with Firmino at the start of the season, you saw all of those three players playing in that zone, thus causing teams a lot of problems. And that's what Liverpool didn't do against Wolves.
But pretty good.
Fairly close.
That's good stuff, Dave. In terms of...
Thanks, just practicing for a game like, if you are, because I'm champion.
Are you the reigning champion? Right.
Oh, actually, yeah, that was out. Don't worry.
Spoilers. Lawrence, Dave has...
He'll be playing Jackmate next week,
Dave
mate.
Has put his explanation down for on the pitch. The facts are worst start to a year, to a calendar year for Liverpool since 1993. Two cup defeats in one week.
Yeah.
A third home defeat in a week. Klopp came out and accepted the blame after the game. I mean, we talked about this last Thursday. What is going on, Lawrence?
Yeah, I mean, he also said that he feels like the atmosphere or the, let me find the exact quote here, mood has changed around the club.
You were talking on Thursday about how, in terms of the atmosphere at Anfield as well.
I do think that's part of it. I think when we get on to discuss the Dimitri Payet stuff, we'll probably end up discussing sort of atmosphere and how that affects the way players play as well. I think he makes a good point. He says, we've still got a very good squad. He says, I'm still quite a good manager, even though we've lost three games. I don't think it's as terrible as people seem to be painting. Liverpool have lost some teams that they should have won against over the last week, but I don't know why you should lose your head over clear rotation and then that rotation backfiring in some way. I mean, you can definitely explain the Wolves game like that, You can also explain going out of the cup in the same, going out of the EFL Cup in a very similar way, because a couple of times there, Liverpool have played a team that sat back. And I think David sort of makes the point that, you know, Liverpool failed to break them down. I think there are a number of sides that failed to break 10 men sat back down very recently. For that reason, I'm not saying...
United.
Well, I mean, yeah, not only them. I think there are... I think that's the problem, is there are a number of teams out there that, that struggled at times to break those teams down. It's not something which is permanent. It's not, you know, you can rotate a side, you can change the formation, you can change all those things. And Liverpool did get a goal back at the end, despite what the notes say at 2-0, Adam. I think it makes sense, you know, I mean, Adam, your alternative truths are getting a little bit facts. Much now. They're alternative facts. The fact is, though, that Liverpool did get a goal back in the end from the pressure that they put on. And I think this side is running low on confidence right now. It's that simple. And they, you know, they need to find a solution to that. The problem is they have Chelsea, Arsenal, and is it Manchester United? In the next five home
running
games,
low
I think.
Confidence, you say there, Lawrence. Some suggestions. They're running low on energy. Not sure about that one.
Interesting. Well, I mean, when Emre Can came on, he was. I think that this, it's maybe an assumption that because Liverpool have stopped pressing in the same way, that therefore they are running low on energy. I do think a few players look like out there like they're using the shadow, you know, in the way that when you press, you know, you talk about the shadow behind you, they're using the shadow that they cast rather than the pressure that they put sometimes. It makes it look as if they're pressing. I can see what people are saying there. I don't know if I 100% accept it, because I think a few players out there are still coming back from injury, a few key players for Liverpool. And I think, you know, Dave made a great point on the weekend that this side looks very different without Mane and Henderson. And my struggle with that is, and I agree, I still think they have players that can fit into those roles or ways of solving that. And I'm not quite sure why Klopp hasn't done that. I do think Mourinho hasn't played public mind games with Klopp. But I think what happened with Manchester United this season has gotten to him a little bit.
Do you think in
those little pokes? There's always little pokes, isn't there? Mourinho is like, yeah, Liverpool haven't got 12 games in 3 days or something like that. It's quite funny. I like it.
Good. I don't even think it's that. I'm not even talking about the media stuff. I just think Mourinho is privately very barbed about Jurgen Klopp. And I think in previous years, he's been quite inculcated against other managers because, you know, he's been a nice, big, popular side and all those sort of things. What my worry is, this looks very similar to what happened at Dortmund a few years ago, when the players looked completely sort of abject, out of ideas. And that game went on for almost four times as long as this.
Another thing that I just thought about then that's quite interesting as well is that spell of poor performance came when Marco Reus got injured. So at the start of the season, Dortmund were playing quite well. He went out injured. He was out for like most of the season. But every time he had like one game back, Dortmund looked really good again, and then he'd get injured again. His ankle would go again. And maybe it's a similar thing with Mane, with Royce. They are quite similar in the roles that they fulfil for Jurgen Klopp. And without those two players, you're missing a massive component of the side. And thus, the side, the, you know, the system no longer works. There's no one that's direct. There's nobody that's...
Dave, I don't know if that's true, though, because obviously Liverpool also scored a shit ton of goals under Klopp last season. And Mane was not in that side.
Definitely not as destructive and not as good on the... You were definitely nowhere near the level that you were at the start of the season as you were last season, obviously, because of the players and so forth. But I think you kind of... I don't know, the end of last season, Liverpool went under the radar because they weren't playing that great, but they were getting results. Maybe it's just that tiny little margin that they're not getting that... into, you know, that tiny bit of luck that, you know, a player gets sent off or a player, you know what I mean? That tiny little bit that someone like Mane, you don't need that luck for.
Well, yeah, I partly agree with that. I also just think that some of the other players need to step up their performances. I think genuinely there are some Liverpool players who look, they're not phoning it in, but, you know, I think Sturridge is feeling the pressure from the fans at the moment. I feel it's unfair because he's a square peg in a round hole.
Not happy to see Sadio Mane coming back though, Lawrence, in time for the the clash with Chelsea.
Not in this nature, no. He did look fairly distraught to be returning to Liverpool.
Wouldn't anyone.
Don't make me go back.
Arranged a private jet to get him back on time.
It was fairly standard practice. Most people, Coutinho's had a private jet before. Other players have had private jets. I think very often it's what they when they want players to feel like they're cared for by the club. I think a lot of people think it's, you know, throwing money around, but obviously not many normal people get a private jet. I would imagine it's fairly standard practice for some of these players.
Jet, Lawrence?
Been on a few chartered jets. I've never had my own jet to myself. But there was just me and the Chelsea chairman on a on a plane. That was rather nice.
I feel.
It's my autobiography, mate, and it's coming out on the back of the True Geordie podcast. I have achieved fame.
What's the name of your potential autobiography? True Lawrence.
True Lawrence.
No, it's actually Lawrence the Sideman.
Look, no, mate, I'm not part of that group. I've not been allowed. I asked.
Mate, you've got to get the book sales. Get in there. You've got to get the book sales on that. You see, people might be searching side men, and they'll get the side man.
Very interesting. Dave, maybe we should look up on Urban Dictionary what side man means. My worry also is that the actual sort of the subtitle is riding his coattails to the top. I don't know if that's sort of catchy.
No, well, it's nice. It's a nice subtitle. I like it. Mane though.
Hey, I mean, when you're that about Mane, Spencer, though, looking forward to it.
Riding. Right.
Wait, hold on, lads, we've got to pause it right now. So, Urban Dictionary for sideman, an irrelevant, powerless guy, also known as a flower man, shows signs of moist and soggy behavior.
Wow.
Yeah. Fucking hell. Delete that website right now.
Dave, that's the hotels that you're riding. Are you riding anyone's at this current moment?
Everybody's coattails. I'm just, as many coattails as I can get, I'm taking them in, sucking them in, and going forward, right?
For a while it was Ed Woodward, but it doesn't seem to be anymore.
Mane, though, riding on the coattails of Fenway Sports Group to get that private jet back in time. He's going to be on the bench reportedly for Tuesday. It was worth a shot. We do focus, though, in these instances, we focus on, obviously, the loser, Liverpool, Dave, but we should give some attention to Wolves. Yeah, defending with discipline, broke with speed. Very impressive, Dave.
Yeah, I didn't actually realise. I watch so much European football, I don't really take that much notice of the Championship. I didn't realise Paul Lambert's back in charge of his side. And his Norwich side played some really good football, and structurally they were really good, diverse. They played diamonds, they played 4-3-3s, they played 4-4-1-1s. They had great flexibility and fluidity in their style of football. And then he went to Villa, and it looked like everything that he'd learned in Germany had just gone. But it feels like this Wolves side, they have a good feel to them. They have a Norwich style feel to them, but they were really good in terms of how they broke Helder Costa. Was very, very good. And Vyman, obviously, with him on the counter-attack. But it kept on being the constant theme that Liverpool would have the ball. Wolves would win it back and they'd attack the channels. It's what you do against a team that keeps a lot of possession. Obviously, you've got your two centre-halves, a defensive midfielder usually, or whichever central midfielder is playing more defensive will sit in front. And it's easy to break on. It's simple to pull them wide. You've got one wide player that pulls one of the centre-backs out of position, and then the centre-forward pretty much has a 1v1 at the back post, and with the space that you do get on the counter attack, that's what Wolves were doing really well. And Helder Costa was absolutely fantastic throughout that 90 minutes, and probably before he got subbed off, and probably should have got a goal added to his assist. But yeah, he's a talented player, and a player that over in Portugal, I think he was at Benfica, was quite highly regarded, and it was an interesting one. Wolves obviously got that Chinese money and have brought him over. Now they want to make that move permanent, but potentially like a Premier League club, the likes of maybe Palace with Sam Allardyce could do with someone like Helder Costa, a winger that will take you on, will commit players, and he's looked good. I kind of remember him playing for Monaco, and I was surprised when he went to Wolves from, being on loan at Monaco to being on loan at Wolves. It was a bit of a strange one, but obviously money does talk in football, but they've got to snap him up as soon as possible because he looks like a very talented young player.
It's interesting, wasn't it? I also think Lambert played a lot of what Liverpool would normally try to do better than Liverpool played it.
Well said.
Yeah. And they pressed really well. David Edwards was fantastic at leading the press when they had the moment. They did sit off, but there were times when they tried to nick it from Liverpool when Liverpool did have a deeper midfield. So yeah, credit to Paul Lambert, definitely. His team was set up perfectly.
I read to Deco as well and what he did. Although any player in that ilk tends to boss Liverpool centre-backs around. So it's, I think it's also worrying that Liverpool don't have a great centre-back combination. Joe Gomez is slowly coming back from injury. He signed a new contract for 5 years the other day, which is great for Liverpool. He is a quality centre-back, reads the game very well. I do worry he gets outpaced sometimes. And if, therefore, you're playing Ragnar Klavan and Joe Gomez at the back, it's not always fantastic.
Some other shocks or surprises.
Good God.
On Saturday, Lincoln City beating Brighton 3-1, reaching the last 16 for the first time in 115 years, beating the Championship leaders. Hopefully they get a big team in the next round. Maybe Manchester United, Dave. That would be exciting. Oxford United as well, beating Newcastle 3-0, reaching the fifth round for the first time in 23 years.
The Newcastle players went to apologise.
Did they?
Fans after getting, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I probably should. Elsewhere on Saturday as well, we had Palace getting beaten 3-0 by Manchester City. Another giant killing, another upset. Interesting one this though, Dave. Third game and third goal in a row for Leroy Sané. Gabriel Jesus as well, looking promising with the assist for Raheem Sterling's opener. I think these attacking options are a boost, a much needed boost potentially for Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, I think they potentially could have stumbled on a really good combination of players there with Gabriel Jesus obviously coming from Brazil, but he's not your typical Brazilian player. It's weird, like the next generation of Brazilian players, they look a little bit more dogged. You think of players like Gabigol and have Gabriel Jesus, they have a little bit more to them than just these flair players. You're thinking of Neymar, Robinho before. They actually have like a bit of aggression to them, and that's what you kind of saw with Gabriel Jesus. Yeah, his assist was absolutely fantastic. He probably should have scored, got himself into a number of good areas. But what I liked about it was how he looked to win the ball back. And that's something that Guardiola is going to be very happy about. It's something that potentially Aguero doesn't give him. So I quite like that front three of Sterling, Gabriel Jesus and Sane. That's three very talented young players that could cause a lot of teams problems. You know, they're all, you know, some of the best young players in world football. You think of the combined transfer fee of all those players, what you're going to be shooting nearly close to £100 million. So there's definite talent in there. And it's Guardiola will find a solution for the City side. And maybe that is exactly what it is. Jesus, Sterling and Sane. Or how can we call that? JSS.
The JSS. Very SJS. Catchy. As for Big Sam, Lawrence, conceded in every game he's managed so far. For the Eagles, I thought he was brought in to sort out the defence. It's his specialty, isn't it?
Really was, mate. He was used to be amazing back in the day. I mean, to be fair, they were playing very rampant Man City, and I doubt that the FA Cup is a massive priority.
Not a priority. That's the problem.
Weirdly. That is part of the issue. Is actually, I mean, that's sort of something that Alan Shearer wasn't really championing, was that actually sometimes it can really just get in the way for managers who are in a relegation battle.
One team,
especially if you want to keep someone focused. Sorry.
Indeed, you're not wrong. Southampton, though, were thrashed 5-0 by Arsenal, who's made 10 changes and yet somehow managed a convincing win. A hat trick for Theo Walcott, Dave, and two for the returning Danny Welbeck, put in a very good performance. His first start since May 2016 looked like he'd never been away. Looked like his finishing. It actually got better.
It improved. I think he took both of his goals very well. The first one was just a classic Danny Welbeck goal. That little chip, he's, you know, done that time and time again for United. I'm quite happy that he's back because he's a player that I wouldn't have, if I was Man United boss or director of football, I would have never have let him go. You never let your young lads that have come through your academy go, that have potential and have promised to eventually have one season where they'll have like a, you know, 25 goal season. But yeah, you know, returning from injury, he's been out for a while, but he did take his goals well. His link-up play was very, very good. And I think he brought other players into play, which is similar to what Sanchez has done for Arsenal this season. So, yeah, it's promising for Arsenal, considering, you know, if you want to rotate, you want to play someone like Sanchez with Danny Welbeck up front, that could be quite an interesting problem for, you know, opposition defences to take. But he was stretching Southampton, and that was the good thing about him. He was stretching them, and he wasn't stationary. He was always on the move. So, yeah, it was a good performance from Danny Welbeck and his celebration. Fantastic.
The old, I believe the meme is called Salt Bay. If you haven't seen it, the guy, he's sort of seasoning some steak. And it seems
How can you
to
not
be,
have seen it?
Yeah, I mean, living under a rock, clearly, if you don't know what Salt Bay is. Danny Welbeck, Danny Welbeck has clearly seen it. And interesting celebration. But a fantastic performance. all of a sudden Arsenal now have a lot of options up front going into the second half of the season could be a big boost for them.
It's incredible, really, because Arsenal give so many people so much ammo for just, you know, being like, oh, those players spend too much time on social media. I know it feels good now. You've beaten Southampton 5-0, but Southampton were already sailing anyway, mate. They've already got the feeling around the club. They've already got a cup in the bag because they're playing an easy team in the final. And then they were like, oh, screw the FA Cup. We don't know
yet.
We're just going to just let Arsenal win this one.
Spurs somehow narrowly won against Wigan Wanderers. A 4-3 win, end-to-end stuff. Thrilling game.
2-0 up, mate.
They did go 2-0 up. It was a bit of an interesting one. The friend I was watching it with had a pound on Wickham Wanderers to be winning at half time, Spurs to win at full time, 100-1. So he was quids in. A bit of a roller coaster of emotions, I have to say. Spurs coming from behind twice, as you say, they were 2-0 down. It was 3-2 with just a minute left to play. Wickham, of course, 70 places below Spurs. Dele Alli had to come on really to bail Spurs out. So despite the win, with Heung-min Son, I think, scored in the 98th minute to grab that winner. And it being a fantastic game, it was a massively entertaining and sort of contributed to the whole weekend being so enjoyable. But the concern for Spurs, I think, would be that lack of depth almost. Some of these squad players are getting a chance. There was a few young players as well. Vincent Janssen starting up front, Sissoko coming in. I think the one worry would be that, you know, those players were given an opportunity to try and prove themselves and maybe push for to compete for the first team. Didn't really show their best selves, and you need Dele Alli to come on and save the day, essentially. But still, very happy to go through to the next round. I think, you know, despite all this talk about the magic of the FA Cup and it's a nice day at Wembley and all this sort of stuff, I think it would be a great trophy for Spurs to win, considering we haven't won anything for almost 10 years now, any silverware. I think it would be a good sign of the progress under Mauricio Pochettino at Spurs. So here's hoping we go through in the next round as well. Elsewhere on Saturday.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I like just the last little bit there. I quite like Spurs, obviously, the 33, but I think they showed great composure for that last goal. I think that's something that shows Pochettino's style as a manager, that they had patience. You see some teams, they lump it into the box, they shoot from outside the area and so forth, but Spurs worked a really good opportunity with Son, and just credit to Pochettino and his coaching and his philosophy of football, that kind of he deserves that win there almost. In it was completely Pochettino goal time. And it's a good performance for Spurs, as you mentioned before.
And he deserves the FA Cup, Dave. No one's going to disagree with that. Chelsea, meanwhile.
No, that's our trophy this year, buddy.
We'll come on to that. Chelsea, meanwhile, beat Brentford 4-0. Comfortable win for them, despite making a few changes. Not a happy return for Josh McEachran, who, as we said on Thursday, was the focus of the build-up. Struggled to make an impact, really, and shield the defence. But Chelsea march on through to the next round. On Sunday, there were more shocks. Steve Morrison sent Millwall through against Watford with an 85th minute volley. Fulham, meanwhile, thrashed Hull City. Might have been very different had Abel Hernandez scored not one, but two penalties. Did anyone see this one?
No, I didn't. What was that penalty instinct?
Essentially, Hernandez stepped up to take the first penalty. Awful. Saved easily by the keeper. Went for the rebound to knock it in. Keeper fouls him as he does so. Hernandez earned himself a second penalty in the space of about 60 seconds, and then he misses that one as well.
Oh, God.
So it could have been very different for Hull, as it was thrashed 4-1 by Fulham. A disappointing result for them. Elsewhere, of course, Sutton United pulling off potentially one of the biggest shocks of the weekend, beating Leeds, a team 83 league places above them. So,
you know, that's not how leagues work. Come on.
It's not how leagues work. But, you know, in the pyramid, you know, that sort of thing. And, of course, Dave, Man United, a comfortable win, beating Wigan 4-0. Bastian Schweinsteiger taking all the headlines here.
Yeah, I think he deserved it. United were good. They were a little bit tenuous and boring in the first half. The tempo was a little bit off, but I suppose if you are Bastian Schweinsteiger and you're the guy controlling the tempo, you're not going to go from, you know, 0 to 60 in a way in terms of your style of football and how you're dictating the play that quickly. You're going to take time to get into the game. Although he didn't pick the tempo up in that first half, the best moment of the game, the best moment of that first half, the goal, the whip ball he put in was fantastic. And it kind of showed what the young players need to see with Bastian Schweinsteiger is just take as much of his game into their game as possible. And it's something that potentially the two young fullbacks, Luke Shaw and Fosu Mensah, need to look at in terms of crossing from those deep areas, because I was a bit frustrated with both of their play in terms of when they were getting to those areas where they could put a ball into the box. Obviously, playing a 4-2-3-1, a lot of the width comes from the fullbacks. They just weren't good enough. They weren't crossing from the right areas. The delivery, the whips, the zone they were aiming for was just completely wrong. Bastian, though, picked up that little pocket of space, whipped it in. Marouane Fellaini, see you later, 1-0. And then United obviously calmed down. And second half, they were fluid and very, very good. And I think Anthony Martial is a player that, again, his development's been quite interesting, left out over the last few weeks. Come back again in the FA Cup and really, really shone in the second half. In the first half, he played as a striker. And just it felt like he was just trying a bit too much. He wasn't really in the game. I think Anthony Martial is a player that you want to get the ball to as much as possible. You want to involve him in the game. When he plays as a striker, he looks a little bit isolated. He looks like he gets frustrated. He tries to come and tries a little bit too much when he should keep it a little bit simple if he's playing through the middle. But when he was moved to left-hand side, he was fantastic. The cross for the Smalling goal, another brilliant ball in the box. And then the link-up play with Mkhitaryan on the counter-attack was absolutely, you know, exquisite. And if United can build on that with those two players counter-attacking with pace, it could be positive for United in the latter rounds of the competition. But in terms of assists, Anthony Martial, since joining Manchester United, has assisted more goals in the FA Cup than any other player.
Not as good as Divock Origi, though, is he? So there is that.
No, definitely. Yeah, I agree.
Elsewhere, then.
You can't deny facts, mate.
Elsewhere this weekend, despite all that magic of the FA Cup going on, Dimitri Payet is no longer a West Ham player, guys. Sad news for everyone. He's finally returned to Marseille. A £25 million deal was struck. Payet apparently taking a 25% pay cut in order to rejoin his former club.
What a hero.
What a hero, not a snake at all. Interesting one in that the reaction seemed to be... Obviously, pretty contentious from West Ham fans. The club accusing him of showing a lack of commitment and respect. David Sullivan saying he wanted to make Payet stay and make an example of him, but in the interest of squad unity, he agreed with Slaven Bilic that he should be sold. I mean, I think we're just glad to see the end of this one, aren't we, Lawrence?
Bit of a weird one. Let's teach that guy a lesson. Teach him a lesson that he's miserable in our city.
Teach him that no man's bigger than the club, you know. You signed your 5.5-year contract under a year ago. We're going to hold you to it, mate. Fuck you.
If you worked in any other job and you said, I want to move jobs, people would just be like, yeah, cool, mate.
Yeah, 4 weeks' notice. See you later, mate.
Yeah, if you're not happy, then that's okay.
It's a strange one, isn't it? Why can't you just give you 4 weeks' notice and be like, oh, I'm shooting off, mate?
Well, I mean, certain people are working towards
God, that'd be chaos.
Yeah, well, I mean, football would fall into just absolute anarchy if that was the case.
Would it, though? Because I think a lot of players would probably just be at the place they wanted to be, right?
But imagine, like, you've got a team, like, you're playing, say it's like United versus Liverpool, right? And, like, four players on one side have handed the notice in, and then five players on the other side have handed the notice in, and they just don't care. What do you do then? Like, you're stuck. You've got these players unmotivated. I suppose it's like Payet, right?
I think initially it probably would happen quite a lot. Like, in the first season, it might happen a fair bit, but then after that, it's probably not, you know, because players are going to be where they want to be.
I just think it would be an insane free-for-all.
Anyway, the point is that Payet's now gone. Both sides got, you know, I think West Ham got 25 million, like say, and he got his move works out well. Frankly, they should have sold him earlier in the summer. They should have tried to cash in, but didn't. And it was a poorly advised move. And I think West Ham are trying to deflect yet more away from why the player wanted to move, which was because essentially, again, you know, if you move to a new office or something and it's not what you want it to be, then maybe you don't feel as comfortable anymore. And, you know, maybe he was hoping the new state. No, maybe he was hoping that things would get better when they moved to the new stadium. Maybe he was hoping that they could find and put some roots down in London, but that didn't happen. And, you know, I'm cynical about players, but he's also taken a 25% pay cut. So,
yeah, I've got... I think if that is the case, you know, I am not familiar with the facts of it in, personally, but in terms of if his family did want to move home and there was that homesick element to it, I've got a certain amount of sympathy. I don't think he went about it the right way necessarily.
Yeah. No, which sort of makes him look a bit snaky, doesn't it? That's the thing that makes him look snaky.
Ooh, snaky. The most overused term in modern football, I'm going to say.
No, mate, that is fraud.
Dave, are you not? Oh. Yes, fraud. I do like fraud. Dave, you're not having any of this homesick stuff, you know? Say if you went to play in China and you wanted to move back home, you know, and the fans were on your back and you're like, mate, my wife wants to move home, you know?
Bare dollar, bro. I would be like, right, okay, right, you move home, I'll take all the dollar. Then when my contract roads will move back, I'll move back into the MLS suite.
It's a poor analogy. I've messed this completely up. But what if you went to France? What if you went to France, Dave? You left Manchester United, you went to France with your wife, with your children, hypothetical children.
Why would Dave leave Manchester United?
Well, he just did.
Your hypothetical wife at this point, Adam.
Dave, I mean, would you not move back to Manchester, take the pay cut, you know, for love, for family, for life, you know?
For money. Oh.
So first and foremost, I don't know why I left Man United in the first place.
Nor do we.
Look, it's not a perfect analogy. I'm just trying to get you to talk to me about this situation.
Let's flip that. Let's say I play for Blackburn Rovers, right? You know, close to Manchester. Scored a few goals at Blackburn, getting a few assists from central midfield. You know, people were starting to notice me. And then a bid came in from, let's say, Montpellier, right? Yeah. So I signed for Montpellier. The wife doesn't work in Montpellier.
Blackburn Rovers to Marseille.
Montpellier, right?
None of this. There's no perfect analogies here. So let's try and keep going, Dave.
You just got to. I think you got to try, man. Like 2 months. Like a year, and then you sign this new deal, and you've given it what, less than 6 months. But I think the thing we don't know, the thing that we've potentially in the defence of Dimitri Payet and his decision making is we don't know what was promised by David Sullivan and David Gohl when he signed that deal. Was he promised that they were going to sign some new strikers? Was he promised that they were going to sign some new centre-backs? Was he promised that they were going to compete for the Champions League places? Because potentially they could have done that. This is the thing, we don't know what happened behind the scenes. And if you did sell Payet the dream that they were going to move for all these players in the summer, the likes of Lacazette, you know, the rest of the players, Bakka, that were linked with West Ham, is it the worst thing in the world that he's gone, actually, 3 months into this, lads, you've not delivered anything that you've said. I'm out. We don't know. I think that's the thing, that we know some of the facts, but we don't know all the facts. But yeah, if it is homesickness and whatever, you know, it's a bit silly. But in terms of Marseille and what they're getting, is they're getting one of the best chance creators in the whole of Europe. And in terms of what they're doing this season with Rudy Garcia, when he's taken over, Rudy Garcia, they've completely changed their system. They've changed their philosophy of the playing at home. There was massive negativity the season before, when they were playing at home. They haven't won in like 13, 14 games or something this season. Their record at home is fantastic. And obviously they won 5-1 against Montpellier on Friday night, Gomis bagging a hat-trick. With Thauvin, Ruben Cabella, they've got a lot of attacking potential there. So potentially Marseille next season, winning the league over in Ligue 1 with the likes of Monaco, PSG, Nice. It's getting competitive.
Big prediction. I think in the end, it worked out for everyone. Dimitri Payet gets to go home. West Ham get 25 mil. As you say, Dave, Marseille get a very talented player and a player who, sort of fulfills their ambitions, essentially, or makes them look to be fulfilling a certain ambition. In terms of the business West Ham have done this window, Lawrence, Payet out, the headline signings in Snodgrass, and obviously Jose Font from Southampton for 8 million. Do you think it's been a good window for them? Overall?
No. I think they probably could have done better. If they'd have sold Dimitri earlier in the window, maybe they could have made a bid on another player. I don't feel like they've had great transfer business recently anyway. I think part of the reason it's been bad transfer business is because they've just been randomly bidding on players along the way. It's made the club look stupid. It's made them look like they don't know what they're doing. Very often, you want to keep things a bit more behind closed doors. And I think it's a little bit of a case of she doth protesteth too much, in the sense that the board almost try and show us what they're doing a little bit too much. And therefore you think, you're being a bit too honest here. And I want to know why.
Trying to portray a certain interpretation.
Level of competence.
Yes, very much so. Well, guys, that brings an end to our weekend review domestically. Let's move on to the European action.
Milwaukee.
Let's talk Europe, ladies and gentlemen. Italy first up.
Is it worth being in the Euro? Do we know?
It's a debate for another time, Lawrence. Another podcast.
Shall we leave the European Union?
Should Donald Trump come to England? Should he be welcome? Should we roll out the red carpet?
Shall we build a wall from north to south so the northerners can't get down?
God, should we start? What would you call our political podcast that we're apparently going to start now?
I call it the front bench.
The front bench. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's very good. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Although then that would say, to the I was going to suggest the three amigos.
What?
Why? Dave, you can't just make up
because of the whole. Yeah, fuck it. Whatever.
Yeah.
All right, because of the whole Mexican thing, you wanted to go down a.
Our Mexican heritage, you know? Of course.
Fuck you, Trump, you fucking motherfucker.
Why don't you call it that? Fuck you, Trump, you fucking motherfucker. That sounds good.
I'm not sure that's going to be political.
There you go.
Guys, we've got to talk about Italy. We've got to talk about Europe
right now, Adam.
Yeah.
I think some listeners have been triggered.
Guys, we've got to talk about Italy. We've got slightly off track somehow. Juventus, Dave. Gonzalo Higuain made it 15 goals for the season this weekend as Juve beat Sassuolo 2-0. Dave, talk to me.
That was a good game. Very, very high, you know, decent tempo at the start of the game for Juve. They're playing a new system. So they've, you know, Allegri, again, he's sort of, you know, he's actually a tinker man. He's not like Ranieri, who used to be the tinker man. He is the new tinker man. The formations he's played at Juve, we've talked about them before, the 3-5-2, the 4-4-2 diamond. This season, he's experimenting to see if he, you know, trying to get Pjanic and Dybala in the same side. He has played that sort of 4-3-3 with two narrow players playing as two number 10s. Didn't quite work. And now he switched to a 4-4-2. It looks like a bit of a 4-2-3-1, which is quite interesting. You've got Mario Mandzukic playing on the left wing, Cuadrado playing on the other side, and then Dybala playing just off Gonzalo Higuain, and then in central midfield, Sami Khedira partners Pjanic. And it looks really good. Like, I'm very, very impressed by Juve. You know, the 4-4-2 is coming back. You're seeing the likes of RB Leipzig playing it, Monaco playing it, and obviously Juventus playing it, all doing very, very well in their domestic leagues. But it's very fluid. The likes of Dybala is, you know, now playing in his favourite position. Mario Mandzukic as well, very, very impressed with him on the left-hand side. Obviously, he's played there before in his career, but you don't expect him to do that at sort of the latter stages. You would expect him to throw his toys out the pram, but did a very, very good job. Got wide well. You know, his timing of his run was very good. Obviously, he works very, very hard. But Juve, it was all about Gonzalo Higuain. Scored the first, took it very, very well. The second goal, he won the ball back. Then played it across to Sami Khedira, who took the ball away very, very nicely following a step over from Dybala. But Juve looked good. And if they can continue this sort of formation, this could really make them dangerous in the Champions League. Because what Juve can do, they did take the two-goal lead and they kind of killed the game. The tempo went down and they started playing it a bit slower and so forth. And if they can do that in the Champions League, nick some goals at the start, then sort of slow the tempo down, sit back. We all know that Italians can defend. And obviously, if they wanted to, they can switch to the 3-5-2 that would move to a 5 at the back if they were, you know, defending late in a game. So I think this Juve side has a lot of different strings to his bow, even more than it made when Allegri made the Champions League final, because then they had, you know, they had the diamond, they had the 3-5-2, but now they've got this other system where they're actually playing with wingers as well. So it just makes Juve a very dangerous proposition. So yeah, I think they're going to be my tip for the dark horse this season in the Champions League.
I thought you were going to say dark horses for Serie A. I was like, they might have been up, something.
I'm such a dark horse.
They are 4 points clear now of their nearest opposition. It's a good win for them ahead of next weekend's Derby d'Italia. Is that how you say it? Derby d'Italia against Inter Milan. Who are now up to fourth in the table after beating Pescara 3-0. Making it seven wins on the bounce. in Serie A.
Say what, mate.
Probably a good decision to sack De Boer in the end. Second place, Roma, meanwhile, as I said, they fell 4 points behind, suffering a surprise 3-2 defeat at Sampdoria, while third place Napoli could only make a 1-1 draw with Palermo. Running out the top five, meanwhile, Lazio, who without the suspended Ciro Immobile, suffered a 1-0 defeat thanks to a 90th minute winner from Roberto Inglese of Chievo. In Spain,
that side looks a lot less dangerous without him, doesn't it?
Indeed. Dominated the game, but couldn't make the breakthrough. In Spain, meanwhile, a 4-point gap there as well. Real Madrid have opened one up with a game in hand after both Barcelona and Sevilla dropped points. Los Blancos beat Real Sociedad 3-0 to bounce back from three games without a win, with goals from Mateo Kovacic, Ronaldo, I think that's his 20th of the season, and Alvaro Morata, whose future had been the subject of some rumours and speculation last week. Probably not going to leave in this window. Maybe in the summer. Some sort of falling out potentially with Florentino Perez, who's unhappy with his attitude, reportedly. Barcelona, meanwhile, they can only draw 1-1 at Real Betis. Controversial one. Did anyone see this ghost goal?
Yeah, well, it wasn't even a ghost. It was just a real goal.
It was just a real goal. How far was it over the line? It felt like, I don't know, a foot, two foot, or something. It was mad.
Similar to that time when Pedro Mendes scored at Old Trafford.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember.
And it was blatantly in. And somehow Carroll got away with it.
Yeah,
absolutely rubbish. I don't know what you're talking about, Lawrence.
It was Jordi Alba's shot going in. Neymar ahead of him, sort of missing the cross because he was sort of tackled to the ground by the player who ended up clearing off the line. So maybe it should have been a penalty as well. Neymar's response to this on Instagram was to screenshot the moment with the eloquent caption, ha 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 ha. So he wasn't happy.
Such a wordsmith.
Spain, the only major European league that doesn't actually have goal line technology, by the way. Probably should just.
Kind of shows Barcelona's inability to break people down as well, although like they really struggled throughout the whole game. Messi eventually dropping into a sort of attacking midfield role. They were so poor with the ball. Neymar was anonymous in the game. Maybe that's why he's screenshotting stuff on Instagram. He just didn't do anything. Suarez looked quite good. Messi didn't get enough on the ball, but Neymar was just non-existent. Absolutely non-existent. And it was this Barcelona. I think it could be the start of the end for Luis Enrique. It really could be. This team's really lackluster.
People have made
this
that prediction
they don't play
before,
with any intensity. I made lots of bold predictions, Adam. We should only talk about the ones that go right. But no, I think it's kind of it is the beginning of the end. That it's you can kind of see when players start, especially this Barcelona team, similar with Tata. What was he called? Tata Martino, whatever his name was.
Martino.
Yeah. It's same thing happened where the players just kind of look really disinterested. And that's what I think we're getting from this Barcelona team right now. And they were poor. Betis deserved to win the game if Ruben Castro had taken a chance on the counter-attack. Could have been different.
Could have been very different as well for Sevilla. Could have gone top if they'd beaten Espanyol this weekend, but they were humbled with a 3-1 defeat. Didn't help that Nicolas Pareja was sent off in the second minute, of course, which brings their 5-game winning run to an end. Still not far behind Real Madrid, though. Atletico Madrid, meanwhile, a fourth, ending the weekend 6 points behind Sevilla after a goalless draw at Alaves. Apparently, the standout moment, Diego Godin and Alaves striker Deverson spat at each other. So that's nice. Finally, Germany. Finally, in Germany, Dortmund stumbled once again, conceding a late equaliser to Mainz, leaving them 14 points behind leaders Bayern Munich. Quite a gap there for Thomas Tuchel's side. Hoffenheim, meanwhile, suffered their first Bundesliga defeat of the season, losing 2-1 to Leipzig. Julian Nagelsmann's side were the only unbeaten side in Europe's top five leagues going into this weekend. But Leipzig, of course, continuing their impressive campaign. They're now just 3 points behind Munich. Meanwhile, rounding out the top four are Frankfurt, up to third after beating Schalke 1-0 away from home. That brings us on to our game of the weekend, Dave, in Ligue 1, PSG Monaco, the so-called El Clasique.
The nouveau-rich football clubs of France combining, exploding. It was a decent enough game on Unai Emery, setting a side out in a 4-3-3, and Monaco yard him, setting them in a 4-4-2 again. I mentioned the 4-4-2 before on the podcast. It's a system that is really coming back into European football, and Monaco Monaco play it really well. It's kind of a little bit different to Leipzig and to Leicester City, should we say? And to how Juventus are playing it. It's quite like it's quite narrow in a way. The fullbacks do offer a lot of width, and they do get forward. Mendy and Sidibe are fantastic getting forward, but they didn't play their best football. I'd say against PSG, they weren't at the counter attacking best. PSG did quite well to nullify them on the counter attack with, you know, the likes of Rabiot having a pretty good game in central midfield. But it was all about Bernardo Silva scoring a fantastic goal 90 minutes plus in added on time, and it's what Monaco deserved. They didn't feel that PSG deserved to win that game. I thought they were a little bit toothless and frump. Julia Draxler had a pretty poor game. Edison Cavani, again, as always, missed chance after chance after chance. But obviously, you know, 21 goals in Liga this season isn't a bad return for a player that consistently misses chances. But it was an interesting game in the title race, and I feel that Monaco are in a better position than PSG at the moment, obviously 3 points ahead, but they just look like a better side altogether. Emery's still trying to find a balance with his team.
Of course, Bernardo Silva with that late equaliser, Dave, earning him a nomination for the TF3 Player of the Week this week. The most prestigious award in Front Free Twitter
weekly football
history. Alongside Bernardo Silva, nominated was Danny Welbeck, Helder Costa, the Wolves winger that we heralded earlier in the show, and of course, Bastian Schweinsteiger, the man taking all the headlines after Manchester United beat Wigan 4-0. The results are in, ladies and gentlemen. After 400 votes on our Twitter poll, every Monday you can vote at the Front Free on Twitter. In fourth place, Bernardo Silva, 6% of the vote. Unfortunately,
every week, and every week he fails.
Danny Welbeck in third place with 14% of the vote. Surprising, yeah. You would have thought the Arsenal fans would have shown more support there.
We don't have many Arsenal fan followers. I feel like we offend most of them.
Hey, if you're an Arsenal fan and you enjoy the podcast, you follow us on Twitter. Tweet us. Tweet us. Let us know you're out there. I'm sure that's not going to happen now. Lawrence has just alienated all of them. The five of them that were listening. Danny Welbeck on 14%, then Helder Costa in second place by virtue of the alphabet, 14% as well. So I've put him just ahead of Welbeck based on his surname there. And with a whopping 66% of the vote, Bastian Schweinsteiger revealing just how Manchester United focused our Twitter following fan base is, surely. Did he really deserve to be player of the week? Not in my book, you know? Danny Welbeck, Salt Bae, 2 goals, you know?
Yeah.
Democracy, eh? What are you going to do? ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to the Front Free Weekend Review. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, Lawrence. Until Thursday, where can people find more of you?
Find me in Africa, mate. I'm off to AFCON. Looks amazing.
No, you're
not. Not really, no. I wish I was, though. It does look really good, doesn't it? Has anyone else seen Benny McCarthy's reaction to the Ghana game when there's a penalty awarded?
No, but please paint me a mental picture.
He just goes mental. He's in the studio watching the game, and he's just sort of absolutely going for it. And you just think, you've not lost it, have you? He loves it.
That was a rich... rich tapestry. Where can people genuinely find you, Lawrence, if they want to? Not Arsenal fans, though, of course. They won't want to find you.
I've got some good friends. The thing is, I like Arsenal. It's just that some of them are difficult.
What about the True Geordie podcast? You had a Game of Thrones star, I don't think it's unfair to say, on your podcast this week.
Yeah. Did you listen? Or have you got it on your...
I listened to the first 5 minutes so far. I will be listening to the rest. It's a long one.
It's a 2-hour podcast. Yeah, it's a tricky one.
Some of the topics discussed within.
Obviously what happens on set, sort of the way that things happen. So sort of around the show, you know, when they get the scripts, how they sort of work out what their characters are going to do, costumes, how it's created. Geordie went into quite a lot of detail on the series and kept asking him questions as if he was the character, which was awkward at times. And then I think he also gives some advice to the public, like, you know, when we give advice on that podcast. So it was good. It was good fun. You can go there. That was interesting. Very interesting. He's an interesting guy. And I've got KSI on next Friday or next Thursday.
The big one. This is the big one.
The Mac Daddy.
That's Friday. It's going up, isn't it?
I think that's Friday. Yeah.
give us a little tease. Why should we listen to you guys chatting to KSI? What is it all about?
Live freestyle rapping.
From you, presumably.
From my next forthcoming album.
Cool. What's the album called?
True Lawrence.
It's the companion piece to the autobiography.
Yeah, you'd think it's
you rapping the autobiography.
It's actually me rapping sections of the audiobook.
You've got to take risks. You've got to do something different in this competitive world, you know?
My middle name's a cappella. And then also anal sex. And I'm trying to think what else we covered. Also his parents. It was interesting. And we challenged him at times. It was a very interesting podcast. Geordie really enjoyed it. So that's all that matters.
He's an interesting man. The most popular... Is he the most popular YouTuber in the UK?
He's the most subscribed to.
Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. Lawrence interviewing alongside the main man, the true Geordie.
The
most popular YouTuber in the whole country. Dave, what have you done this week?
Not a lot.
Took it easy. Chilled out.
Yeah, took it easy. Chilled out.
It was a very personal week, haven't
you? Yeah, personal week, Lawrence. That's a good way to describe it, actually. Thanks a lot. You've extended my vocabulary like you do every week.
Personal.
Dave, if people want to find more of you before Thursday and before
my personal work,
anything that you want people to see more of you. People love you, Dave.
Isn't
where can they find you?
No, not at the moment. There's nothing really going down, is there?
To meet you, Pioneer.
That was like weeks ago, Lawrence. That was on the 12th of Jan.
Oh, sorry, Dave. You retweeted
on the 30th.
I thought you'd updated it.
Sounds incandescent with rage, Dave. People should check out the Front Three on YouTube, Dave. Your videos are doing very well. The Football Explained videos. Fantastic videos.
Should be some more coming out soon.
Great.
Yeah, just Statman Dave. Google it.
Google it, lads.
And like it. Subscribe to it. Google it. Try to work on those Google algorithms at the moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you want the search volume to be higher. So if everyone goes and searches... Does that have some... I don't think that has any impact, to be fair.
Surely it must do.
It does, do you reckon? Wow.
So what they're saying at the moment is if you are improving your search traffic, obviously everything else will improve. Kind of makes sense.
SEO insider tips.
In a long way.
From Statman Dave there.
SEO.
Guys, pay attention.
Insider trading.
In many ways. Guys, you can follow me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood, BOULTWOOD, in case you don't know how to spell Boltwood. I wonder how many followers that's cost me. People who don't realise that's how my name's been spelled. Probably hundreds
of
thousands.
Just be Adam BW, surely.
Adam BW. I don't like that. Adam BW. Adam B. Wood, you know? Got something like that. What about Adam WB?
You see, Adam, I changed your name to Adam Boltinio.
Ooh, it's got a bit of flair, a bit of South American.
I'd call myself flair.
I'd be Adam Boltcast.
Ooh, Boltcast. I'm going to just change the Boltcast. But then people would still spell the Bolt wrong. This is the problem, Lawrence. I might just have to call it Adamcast. It just doesn't have the same ring to it as Lostcast. It's not as catchy, you know?
What about Adcast?
Adcast. No, I need something new. I need something fresh. I need something that's going to make me stand out, Lawrence. I can't be riding your coattails, your Twitter handle coattails, as it were.
Mate, you better stop then.
Guys, if you have any suggestions for... apparently, I'm getting a new Twitter handle, so if you want to send something in...
What about @deleteUber?
@deleteUber. Why are people deleting Uber?
Because I am currently... I can't tell if it's a misunderstanding or not, but basically the CEO said... sort of got involved with this whole thing that Trump's doing with closing the borders to certain countries. Ooh. And now people are deleting their accounts and deleting Uber.
Lawrence, save it for the front bench coming up
good
soon on your podcast app. Guys, thank you so much for listening. We will see you on Thursday and we'll see you on the front bench in the near future, apparently. So until then, goodbye.
God, that's going to be explosive.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Until then, goodbye and have a fantastic week. We look forward to seeing you on Thursday.